Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Hello, it's Candace.
Hey, it's Elena.
And this is Cousins on Crime. Elena, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. It's nice to see your face.
Yes.
From your closet. we need to take a moment and prepare for this episode because...
We need to take a few deep breaths or...
Yes, we okay. need to take some breaths. We need to prepare ourselves. This is the most horrifying case I have ever heard of in my entire life.
Oh, no.
I've never heard of this case before. It surprises me because it's literally the most horrifying case, probably, in true crime we know of. And I've never heard it covered on, like, a podcast or a crime show or... Maybe I've been living under a rock. I don't know. But it's so, so bad. So,
oh, no.
Major advisory here. Things happened to this girl that will absolutely nauseate you. So, just be warned. It's really, really bad. So, so bad. But she deserves to have her story told. If she can endure what she did, surely I can tell you her story and get through it. So,
okay.
I think that would honor her memory. Junko Futura. Have you heard of her before?
I have not.
She was a 16-year-old. She was a high school student in Misato, Japan. And I'm sorry, guys. I'm going to butcher... probably all of these words and names, but I'll do my best. Let me just tell you about this girl. So this is 1988, by the way. She was born to an absolutely wonderful family. Her parents were lovely. She had two brothers, one older brother, one younger. So she was a little sandwich in there, sandwich. Mm-hmm. Her family adored her. They just thought she hung the moon. She was very studious in school. She was very focused. She was really committed to her schoolwork. And she even had an after-school job at 16 years old. Now, some reports said she was 17. Some reports said she was 16. I couldn't find her actual birthday. And a lot of the original sources... were in Japanese, so it was hard to know, but she was 16 or 17 at this time. She didn't participate in any cheeky activities at school. She wasn't rebellious. She never had smoked, drank, done any drugs of any kind. She was very straight-laced, considered like a goody-goody, but not in a negative way. She had lots of friends. She was popular. And even though she was really popular in her school, she was nice to everybody. So she wasn't like one of those, you know, mean girls or anything. She just was friendly with everyone. And you can imagine how proud her parents were of her.
Absolutely.
That's really not typical of a 16, 17-year-old girl to be so devoted. She was so devoted to... her academics and her future, So much so that she even had like a proper job lined up for when she graduated high school. Yeah. So as if she couldn't be any more perfect than that, on top of all of it, she was absolutely gorgeous. I saved the most irrelevant thing for last.
Because she had it all.
Absolutely had it all. I mean, she had cheekbones for days. She was just stunning. And everyone else thought so too. She got a lot of attention among her peers, but she really was not distracted by that. You know, she, I mean, I'm sure she felt beautiful, but she didn't act like she was that beautiful. But one kid in particular had his sights set on her. His name was Hiroshi Miyano. And I really don't care if I butcher his name. If I do, good. He was 18 at the time of this crime. He was known as the school bully. He and his friends were like wannabe gangsters. They were involved in petty crimes, except I did read that they committed sexual assaults, like rapes, and I don't consider that a petty crime, but they did, you know, burglaries and just being hoodlums, but like in a really, really bad way.
Yeah. Okay.
So I couldn't find any details as to if they were caught for any of these things or punished or if, you know, they were out there just making a name for themselves on the street. They wanted to join the Yakuza. They wanted to join the Yakuza, which was an organized crime ring in Japan, very similar to the mafia.
Wow.
Yeah. And let me just tell you a little bit about the Yakuza, because it's kind of important to the story. It's really what drives them to do what they did. The Yakuza was also referred to as Gokudo or Boryakuden. Boryokuden, which actually means violence groups.
Oh, wow.
The word Yakuza actually means good for nothing. And this crime organization began to form way back in the 17th century.
Wow.
In the feudal period of Japan. Yeah.
And they just kept it going.
Oh, yep. Some of their crimes included like smuggling, blackmail, gambling, you know, extortion and things like that. And also many different forms of racketeering. Like they controlled restaurants and bars and all that kind of stuff later on. And they didn't just do these crimes in Japan. They took their ring global. I mean, they did this stuff all over the place. One of their signatures was getting really large tattoos, like literally a tattoo that covered their entire body. Not like Travis Barker, but I mean like a colored tattoo that looked like they were wearing clothes. Just insane. Yeah. They also participated in samurai-like rituals. And actually, some historians believed that the Yakuza descended from masterless samurai. So it was just a terrible spinoff of samurai. You know, the samurai were warriors and they did suicide rituals and things like that. And
right.
But this was a very wannabe samurai's gangsters type of thing.
Okay.
Just a bunch of losers, really, to sum it up. And like I said, it was a lot like the Italian mafia, and it resembled kind of like a family structure where there was a leader and a bunch of followers, and they stuck together and committed crimes together. But as they entered the 21st century, they kind of steered away a little bit from the violent part of their crimes, and they did more like white-collar crimes. So more bribery, extortion, they kind of really focused on stuff like that. And they were also known to make charitable donations of all things.
How nice.
Yes, thank you for that. And they were actually called upon to perform public functions sometimes, like security and stuff like that.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, really bizarre. So Hiroshi and his friends thought this kind of activity would be so cool to be a part of. Now back to Hiroshi as it relates to Junko. Now, it's difficult to pin down just one way this went down, but many sources maintained that they actually went to school together and he fancied her and asked her out and she turned him down. So that's kind of one of the more prevalent things that I read. What we know for sure, though, is that Hiroshi Miyano and Shinji Minato were gearing up to rape someone.
Wow.
They had committed rape recently. They thought it was fun. And they were like, let's do that again. Because they were just sacks of garbage.
Wow.
So they were on the prowl to find someone. Now, one day, they spot Junko on her bike leaving her after-school job. She's biking home. And they come up with this ruse, like, you know in the movie Enough with Jennifer Lopez?
No, I haven't watched that one.
Okay, so she's a waitress, and these two friends come up with this plan, like, one of them will insult her and make her feel really bad about herself, and then the other one will swoop in and blah, 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 blah.
Master manipulation. Okay.
Yeah, so they come up with something similar to this. I don't know why I felt like... like telling you about that movie, but I really like that movie. But anyways, one of them says, okay, I'm going to push her off her bike and then you can act like you're coming to help her.
Okay.
So Shinji kicks her off her bike. She falls off. She's like, I don't know how hurt she was, but she was probably like very confused. So Hiroshi Miyano gets to be the hero because he liked her. And he comes... runs over to her and says, I just saw what happened. You know, let me walk you home just in case this person, like, comes back. You know, you're not safe. Like, this doesn't feel safe. Let me just escort you home. And she does accept after she gets her bearings. You know, she's brushing herself off. She's wondering what the heck happened and why. Didn't do anything to deserve that. And if... they did go to school together. It makes sense why she would go with him. Like, why she would agree
to have
him.
She knew of him. She's seen him before.
Right. So, if she had known him, she probably felt like, okay, here's somebody I kind of know. He's going to walk me home. This is... I feel safe.
Gotcha.
So, she starts walking with him. And as they're walking, she thinks they're going to her house where her family's waiting for her. And he shoves her in this abandoned warehouse and viciously rapes her there.
Oh my God, Lord.
Terribly. He then took her to a hotel nearby and raped her some more. Now, when I read this, I'm like, how did he get her from the building to the hotel without her screaming or someone seeing her or... right. Or being able to, like, break free at some point. If you think about it, she was a very compliant girl. She stayed
followed
within
the
lines.
Rules. Yeah.
To a fault. Yeah. She probably was very intimidated and thought, you know, if I just do what he wants, he'll let me go. I don't know why she went along with it, but she did. And in that moment, something evil was born there. Because Hiroshi got this taste of what it was like to be a Yakuza boss. What it was like to
control
someone. Yeah. And have them do whatever he wanted. Like, literally, he had control of another person. And that lit a fire in him.
Oh, wow.
There at the hotel, he called his boys up, Nobuharu Minato, Shinji Minato, and Joe Ogura. And from then on, these four would be in this together. These four boys, because they were boys, would be carrying out these acts together. They all participated in raping her at the hotel.
Oh my Lord.
Just taking turns, brutalizing her. The next day, they took her to the park and they continued this behavior.
Wow.
Later that day, so this is day two of her not having come home, the guys took her to a house that was actually owned by Nobuharu Minato's parents. And it was kind of where they did their like gang hangout. It was in the Ayase district of Adachi, Tokyo. They made her call her parents because they figured, I bet her parents are looking for her. And in turn, I bet the police are looking for her. So they made her call her parents and say, I'm fine. I just ran away. I don't want to come home. Please don't look for me. Don't have the police look for me. And they had. They had called the police, and they had already started an investigation.
Oh,
so
wow.
She asked them to basically have the police back off. I'm sure she, at this point, is still thinking, if I comply, they will eventually let me go, or maybe by doing what they say, I can buy time to figure out, like, how to get out of this mess. Or even that her parents wouldn't believe her and the police would still be looking for her and eventually find her. Because her parents knew her, she wouldn't just run away. So they didn't believe that she would actually just run away. I couldn't find any details as to what her parents did this whole time she was gone, like after this phone call. But the phone call was made and they told Junko, the guys did, if you don't do this, like if you don't call your parents and tell them this, we will kill you because we have your address. And before we kill you, we're going to go kill your whole family.
Oh,
so
wow.
You have to do what we say. So she, if she was intimidated before, now she's like scared because
yeah,
it's not just her life. It's her whole family that she's worried about. So at one point, they revealed to her that they were in the Yakuza gang.
Mm.
It was reported that Nobuharu's parents came to see their son several times, like multiple times while Junko was captive there. Most outlets said they visited quite frequently, so I don't think they lived there.
Okay.
I think he lived there or stayed there, or that was just like a property they had. But they did meet her, and at first, Nobuharu said, this is my girlfriend. And then he said, you better pretend like you're my girlfriend, or I'm going to kill your whole family. So she did, and eventually they kept coming by, and the more they came by, the more disheveled she looked, and they started to feel like something wasn't right. Well, eventually she cried out for help when they came to visit.
Oh my gosh, bless her heart.
And they did nothing.
They did nothing.
They didn't tell anyone. They certainly didn't challenge the situation because they actually were scared of Hiroshi and they were scared of their son. They believed that they had already had ties to the Yakuza gang. So they thought if we meddle in any way, we could be in danger.
Okay.
Which, gross.
Yeah.
I just can't even. It was there at this home that the boys would subject Junko to the most horrific living nightmare anyone could ever endure. And this is where it gets really, really bad. So if you guys are not up for this, just skip ahead a little bit. I'm going to just run through the way they treated her so we can get through it and get on the other side of it. So here we go. You've been warned. They kept her naked most of the time. They beat her continuously, just whenever, for no reason. They would beat her with golf clubs. They would bang her head up against the floor and the walls. She was hung from the ceiling and used as a punching bag. They would beat her with their fists or anything they could find to basically inflict pain or damage. She was raped repeatedly, and not just by the four boys. They ended up calling Yakuza members over, and it was estimated that over 100 men participated in raping her. One report said on one day alone she had been raped repeatedly by 12 different men, just in one day.
Oh my lord.
They urinated on her, like they would rape her, then pee on her. Everyone did this, including the 100 plus men. They estimated she was raped over 400 times in total. I don't know that somebody was keeping track of all of that, but I guess they tried to quantify the amount of times she was raped in a day and how many times, like how many days she was held captive. If you think what I just said is bad, it gets worse. They forced her to masturbate in front of them and turned them on so that they could rape her again and again. They used foreign objects to rape her as well. Bottles, needles, shish kebab skewers, scissors. And they raped her in her vagina and anus with all of these objects. They didn't just sexualize her in these violent ways. They also experimented on her. They put lit firecrackers and lit cigarettes in her vagina.
In the world? Oh my.
They also decided to see what would happen if they put a lit light bulb in her vagina. And what happened was, if you leave it in there long enough, it'll explode. So that happened to her.
Bless her heart, Lord.
And if you think about the torture that is taking place and the injuries she was sustaining during this period, they were horrific. Injuries on top of injuries. Like, her body had no chance to recover from anything. So she got to the point where she couldn't breathe through her nose. Her nose was just, like, crusted shut with blood. Probably broken as well. Her organs were shutting down. So every time she would drink, she would immediately throw up. And you're probably thinking, oh, well, at least they let her drink. Yeah, they let her drink her own urine. So that's nice.
Oh my gosh.
But they didn't let her eat. They starved her. Of course, they would beat her for throwing up her own urine and defecating on the floor. They inflicted pain on her absolutely any opportunity and with anything available. Just whatever they could get their hands on at the moment. They kept her in a freezer for hours on end just to see what would happen. They made her sleep out on the balcony sometimes, and it was November, so it got really cold. And they just wanted her to suffer. Just any way they could make her suffer, they were just being creative at this point. Well, one day she got to a phone, and she tried calling police, but was quickly caught.
Oh, no.
And you can imagine they brutalized her so much. They lit her feet on fire, like literally poured lighter fluid all over her feet and lit them on fire. She, at this point, wasn't able to walk after that. She had to crawl around in excruciating pain. It would take her like an hour to crawl to the bathroom. Her feet were burned, yes. But her legs were also burned, you know, just due to proximity. So her whole body had been covered in injuries from the incessant beatings. Now her feet and legs were burned. They smashed her hands with weights so that her hands were now completely broken. She didn't have either of those faculties. And they burned her another time. Like, they poured lighter fluid on her and lit her on fire. And she lived through all that.
Oh,
she
Lord.
Lived through all that. Okay, That's the worst of it. So on day 44.
Wow.
Yes. Day 44. She was held for 44 days and completely just torn to shreds by four waists.
Yeah.
Is all I can really say. The boys made Junko play a game with them. It was called Mahjong Solitaire. And even though she had been terrorized for 44 days, assaulted, her body destroyed, her mind destroyed, and she was just existing at that point, she played, and she beat them. She won the game.
Oh.
Because they're a bunch of idiots.
Right.
And she's...
she's a smart
a legend.
Yeah.
That pissed them off.
Yeah, I'm sure.
That pissed them off, right off. And, of course, they beat her. They beat her with iron barbells, and then they decided to light her on fire again for a third time. Well, this time she would not live through it. She could not move. The very first time they lit her on fire, she was able to put herself out. Like, she was able to put the fire out. She was injured, like, severely, but she could at least move her arms and everything.
Yeah.
At this point, she was not even mobile. She couldn't put the fire out. She just couldn't.
Right.
So, Junko finally died on January 4th, 1989. All I can say is thank God.
Yeah, I mean...
that she was finally free from that hell. I just...
why?
You never want to say, oh, thank God she died, you know?
No, but at that point, I would be like, okay, I'm just going to lay here and die. Like, I can't take it anymore.
Well, she begged them, please, just kill me. Just kill me. And I wondered, like, when they made her sleep on the balcony, I was like, I wonder why she just didn't jump off that balcony.
Yeah.
You know? But the thing is, she probably couldn't. She probably couldn't even lift herself up to do that.
Right.
Because she was so terribly injured that whole time.
Or was she thinking, I need to get back to my family?
I know. She was probably thinking, I need to get to work. Aww. I have like a test tomorrow. You know what I mean? She probably was thinking things like that. And she, like I said, repeatedly, multiple times throughout that incident, begged them, just kill me already.
Yeah.
I can't believe she lived for as long as she did.
Yeah.
She probably had severe internal bleeding. You know, she probably had head injuries.
And had she died earlier, I mean, would they have gone and found another victim?
Probably. I mean, they probably would have tried. But the reason they kept her for so long was because, you know, they had already raped that girl before.
Okay,
and they
right.
let her go. I don't know if they, you know, covered themselves or, you know, wore masks or whatever, but they had accomplished that. They let her go. And this time they were like, I don't think we should just let her go this time.
We're just going to play around with her.
Yeah, exactly. And Junko stops breathing, and the guys were gone at this point. They weren't at the house. They weren't there. They get a phone call from one of the brothers who was there at the time. And they freak out and they run home. Why? Why were they surprised she died? I have no idea.
Uh-uh.
Bunch of idiots. They should have been surprised that she lived through all
Absolutely.
Of that.
Absolutely.
Not that she finally died. So they're like, what are we going to do with her? That's like, we're going to go down for murder now.
Well, you think?
Like, we're not just... well, they had no concept of...
guilt.
Consequence.
Or, yeah, apparently.
At all. So they get a 55-gallon drum. They put her inside. And they covered her in concrete. Just poured concrete in there and encased her in concrete. Then they dumped her out at a construction site. And there is an absolutely horrifyingly chilling photo of this concrete barrel. And you can just see her hair sticking out the top. It literally looks like when you jump into a pool, you know?
Yeah.
And you see somebody's hair come out the top. Like, their tuft of hair is the last thing to get wet to go down.
Yeah.
Well, her hair never went down into the concrete, so it's just sticking out the top there. Horrifying. So what happened next? Well, Hiroshi was detained by the police and questioned for the rape of that 19-year-old girl, like I was telling you about.
Uh-huh.
And during the questioning, they're asking him, you know, I don't know how they suspected he was involved in that. Maybe she identified him. I don't really know. I couldn't find that information. But I do know that he was sitting there answering the police questions. And he starts saying, yeah, da-da-da-da, Junko, da-da-da-da-da. And they're like, say what?
Did you just say
Junko? Yeah. He's like, what are you talking about? Because we're talking about, what's her face?
Oh my gosh. Know,
the 19-year-old. And he's like, oh, no. No, I meant that. Like, I meant the 19-year-old. So he was an idiot and he was confused at times and he ended up answering questions about Junko's rape and murder.
Yeah.
So they caught it and he tried to like steer away from what he was saying. They're like, no, you're going to need to tell us about that.
Mm-hmm.
Like what you're talking about. Because they knew she was missing.
Right.
They knew that name. And so he ended up confessing to everything. He told them everything. Everything we know about what happened to her
is from his confession.
From him and the others. The investigators were able to locate the barrel containing her body because he did tell them, you know, what they did with the body. They ended up breaking it open and sending her out for an autopsy. And during that examination, they found pieces of bottle and other shards of glass still in her rectal cavity.
Jesus.
And they discovered she was pregnant.
Oh my God.
They had gotten her pregnant, but her uterus was absolutely, completely traumatized. The fetus was, I don't know how she could have gotten pregnant under such conditions. Like, it is blowing my mind. But, just terrible.
Wow.
Terrible. Well, they notified her family that they had found her and that she was deceased. And they detailed what happened to her. Just, it's reported that her mother fainted.
Yeah.
And was actually committed to a long-term stay in a psychiatric facility,
that would happen to
me.
I
would be too.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Or I would, like, claw my way into where those boys were and rip them to shreds.
Yeah.
Rip them limb from limb is what I would do. Starting with their eyelids.
Gosh.
Now, after all the boys were caught and arrested, the Japanese court decided, you know, we're not going to release their names because they're minors. Luckily, a journalist with the Shukan Bunshin magazine did some digging and found and published their names for all to see.
Ha-ha.
He was like, you know what? None of you deserve anonymity.
No.
None of you. Y'all are sacks of steaming, putrefied garbage, and your names should be out there for the world to see.
Yep.
Like, we want to know your name. You didn't afford Junko any dignities. Why should you get
any?
So, they were tried as minors. And I'm sorry, but if you commit such heinous acts, especially sexual assaults, you should automatically be tried as an adult.
Well, because didn't you say Hiroshi was 18 at the time?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, here in the United States, that's adult age. Like,
exactly. Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know why that was considered. He actually got the worst sentence because he was considered the mastermind. So I don't know if he got the worst sentence because he was the oldest.
Okay.
Or if he got the worst sentence because
he's the one that actually grabbed her.
He was the ringleader to this whole thing. But I think if you're gonna act like a big tough guy, you should be tried as a big tough guy.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
But I mean, who am I? The Japanese courts obviously didn't put me in charge, so they tried them as juveniles, but they sentenced them as adults. Okay. After the conviction, their sentences were just a disgrace. The ringleader, like I said, Hiroshi Miyano, was sentenced to 17 years. 17 years.
Wow.
He appealed. Like, why? I don't know, but he was like, you know what? No, I'm going to appeal this. Well, Judge Ryuji Yanasi was like, sir, not only am I not going to reduce your sentence, but I'm adding time to your sentence for wasting my time.
Thank you.
So he increased his sentence to 20 years.
Okay.
Which, that's amazing. I wish you would have added a little
bit
more.
I've never heard of that.
If you have the power to slap additional time onto someone, like, slap some additional time on there, you know?
Yeah.
But hey, beggars can't be choosy. I'm glad he was like, no, sir. This one's going to really twist your melon. The other three miscreants served less than 8 years each.
What?
And were released back into society.
What? I'm so mad right now.
Joe Ogura, who changed his name to Joe Kamisaku, he was actually adopted by one of his supporters, so he changed his name, which, like...
Who is supporting
okay,
him?
Good for you. I don't know. He was released in 1999, but was returned to prison shortly after, in 2004, because he beat somebody up.
Oh.
He beat up this guy, Isano. Sorry, guy. Sorry about that. He thought this guy was taking his girlfriend away from him.
How dare.
He beat this guy up. After this initial beating, he put him in the trunk of his car, drove him to a bar, got him out of the car, and continued to beat him for 4 hours, savagely.
So nobody else
was at this
bar?
He got 7 years for this crime. I don't think so. He was eventually caught, but yeah, he got 7 years. Seven years. Repeat offender, absolutely violent, 7 years. I know nothing about the laws in Japan, but it's starting to sound like our criminal justice system. Just saying.
I don't get it.
It came to light later that Joe had been harassing Isono for a while and taunting him. He would tell him, I'm going to hurt you, I'll get away with it. And he even bragged that he had served time for murder and he was a free man. So it really annoys me because that was obviously premeditated.
Right.
And who's to say he wasn't trying to kill him?
True.
So what about the 100-plus men that were alleged to have participated in the incessant rape of Junko? Well, forensic analysis showed they actually found semen and pubic hair on her body when she was found. And they were able to link it back to two other guys, Koichi Aihara and Tetsuo Nakamura. It probably was impossible to find everyone. I am impressed that they were even able to find two more.
Yeah.
Forensic analysis.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. That is impressive.
I couldn't find anything to say whether or not they were punished for their involvement, but there are their names for you to shame them.
Okay.
I don't have any power other than speaking on this podcast, so there are their names and shame on them. This case has been covered in the media heavily in Japan. This is obviously horrifying.
Right.
And it has really haunted their culture. And one of the most mainstream, if you will, films was in 1995, and I'm not even going to try to say the Japanese name, but it translates to concrete encased high school girl murder case. It portrays the Yuzu, which is kind of like a slang for that gang, as basically being the orchestrator of the kidnapping and murder. So I don't know that we'll ever know truthfully if it was actually a Yakuza crime initiative, or if this was motivated by Hiroshi's damaged ego. Either way, this poor girl who had the future.
Yeah.
She could have done anything she wanted.
Yeah.
She was just that sort of person. Why? I just, like, I never want to hear this happening to anybody.
No.
I never want to hear about 1/16th of any of this happening to anybody.
Right.
Even someone who probably deserves it. But the heaviness of what she meant to the world and what she would have done in this world.
Right.
Just makes me sick.
It is very disgusting and sickening.
I'm horrified. Like, I don't know. I'm just, my heart is crushed that I share humanity with those boys.
Right.
And they're out
living,
not eating Chick-fil-A, but probably McDonald's. I don't think there's Chick-fil-A in Japan.
But living their life. And
yeah,
I do not understand what kind of hate you have to have, or that you can even have, to do those kinds of things to a precious life.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's not human.
No.
It's not. You have to be out of your mind.
Yeah.
With rage and narcissism. I mean, they behaved like, well, we can just do this. Like, they were never going to get caught. She, like, wasn't going to die eventually. She was some immortal
right.
punching bag that they could just destroy.
Yeah.
I just, horrifying.
Yeah.
Just horrifying. And I said what I said at the beginning of the episode about telling her story. I was listening to a podcast a couple weeks ago, and the mother of the victim was talking about how they gave her a picture to identify her daughter who had been murdered. And she said, you know, I can't bring myself to look at it. I just can't. And then she had this clarity, like, she doesn't get to do anything else ever again.
Yeah.
She endured what she endured, and she's now dead. And if I have to live with that image in my mind for the rest of my life, that is a small burden to bear for her.
Wow.
And the way she explained it was way more eloquent than what I just said, but it really puts it into perspective when we're talking about these victims and these cases. And it's like, these are horrific cases, especially this one. This one will go down for me like the worst thing I've ever heard in my entire life.
Yeah.
Who am I to shy away from speaking about what she went through because it makes me feel uncomfortable?
Right, right.
You know? And I almost didn't cover this story because I thought, my God.
Nobody wants to listen to this.
Nobody is going to listen to this. People are going to be on their lunch break. They're going to turn this off. But you know what? I respect if you can't bring yourself to listen to that. But I'm going to tell her story.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell it.
Yeah.
And if you have made it this far, thank you for honoring her. And I know it's difficult to hear. And if you can believe it, which you probably can't, I left some things out that they did to her. I just thought it, at that point it was gratuitous to include every single thing they did to her. But there it is.
Yeah.
There it is.
Well, I'm so, so sad and so sorry that she went through that. And I thank you for telling her story, Candace. I know that was difficult.
Yeah, that was, this may make me sound like clinically insane, but I can dive into these cases and these stories and I don't carry them around. I can be there for a minute, but this one's going to be with me.
Yeah.
Because I just cannot imagine the horror. I mean, you think about people who, you know, you think about children who are kidnapped and then eventually killed and you think, my God.
Right.
They must have been so scared. They must have been. But this woman, this young lady was held and brutalized for 44 days, over a month.
Yeah. I mean, what else can you say about that? It's just speechless. It makes me speechless.
Yeah, yeah. There's nothing more you can say about it other than thanks for listening. And, you know, we should do this again sometime. not this.
No.
Let's not do this again. Rest in peace, Junko.
Yes.
Rest in peace, you beautiful little angel. Fly high. All right, let's do this again sometime.
Yeah, see ya.
For some more uplifting Bible study.
Bye, y'all.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.